The problem almost always for most of us is we're not looking at format. We're not looking at medium. And if we could make that change in our brain, how do I take this art that I'm making and make it usable? That's when everything changes. That's when you can start making money.
Welcome to the Influence by Design podcast. I'm Samantha Riley, authority positioning strategist for coaches and experts. If you're ready to build a business that gives you more than just a caffeine addiction, and you dream of making more money, having more time, and having the freedom to be living your best life, then you're in the right place. It's time to level up.
Welcome to today's episode of Influence by Design. I'm your host for today, Samantha Riley, and I'm really looking forward to interviewing Karina Gardner today. And I'm really looking forward to this conversation because Karina is a creative, and we're going to talk more about what it is that she does. Why I'm excited about this conversation is as coaches, as experts, as practitioners, I think there's this little pull to want to be creative. And why I think this is amazing is that right now, especially in this world of AI, is going to be our secret sauce. And when we can cultivate and nurture this creative side, it's really going to have us standing out. So, Karina, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here. And I'm really looking forward to this conversation, as I just said.
I am so excited to be here. I'm excited to talk about creativity. And I think a lot of people are going to be able to take what we say today and really run with it, do some really cool things so that they can stand out.
Absolutely. No, you've got a beautiful background there. I know if you're listening, you're missing out. But if you're seeing this, I am a creative. I owned a dance studio for 20 years, as most of my audience knows. I used to love the costume design, the set design. I am a closet scrapbooker. I absolutely love scrapbooking. You know, you design fabric, you do all these beautiful things. I'd love you to share sort of that creative and how that flowed into business, because there is as we were talking about before we press record, there's this starving artist narrative that's still out in the world. So take us through like how you got started in what it is that you do and how you brought that into business.
Yeah. So I have an interesting background because very, very young, my bachelor's degree is actually in communications with an emphasis in marketing. And I thought I was going to get into the advertising world. I was like, this will be amazing. And at the time, Adobe was brand spanking new. But as these new little marketing communications degree users, we had to use Photoshop and it was awful. It was so hard and awful. But it became very, very clear that whoever could make the visuals look really good was actually in charge of the ad. And I just went, okay, I've got to change something. So I went and got a master's degree in design to help me in advertising. Well, this is the problem. If you go get a master's degree in design, just this is like the hint, you will not care about advertising. You will just want to be a designer. I just had the best time. I loved being a designer, ended up getting my PhD in design. And before that, I really felt like I would have never tried to be a designer in my bachelor's degree days because I didn't feel like I was artistic enough. I didn't feel like I could draw. But it was so crazy going into it as a master's degree student because I realized the thing that honestly, I think everybody starts to figure out, which is design or artistry actually can be learned. And especially with the help of software, there are lots of things we can do to be creative. We just have to figure out the means to get there. And so a lot of people are always like, you must have been always artistic. I was like, actually, no. I mean, I wanted to be, but I didn't feel like I was. Here I am 20 something years later. People would say that I'm an illustrator. They would say I'm a designer. And I've illustrated lots of fabric lines. I was the creative director of a scrapbooking company, owned a physical products company where we did stuff with Nordstrom. We did coloring books and paper dolls. And I illustrated all of those. But it's so crazy because at the very beginning, I would have told you, no way. There's no way I could do something like that.
I love this so much. And you've got children that have gone into the creative world too. Actually, I'd love you to share what it is your children do. And because obviously you've instilled that beautiful creativity into them as well.
Yeah, I think so. I have three kids. One's still little and figuring things out. He's in elementary school. But my two older ones, I have one in high school and one who just started college. And one of them's in animation and one is in writing, creative writing. She wants to be an author. And, you know, I think 20 something years ago, especially as someone in market, I'd be like, you know what, like go find something that we know for sure will make you money. Here's the crazy thing. For 16 years, I've owned my own design business. I've made more money than anybody who had like a regular, you know, whatever degree. And the thing I figured out was hard work, consistency, understanding, you know, marketplaces and distribution. You could be a super creative in any field and start making money.
I love that you're just getting rid of this narrative. I was having a conversation yesterday with a teenage boy that we know, and you know, he was a little bit down, and I'm saying, well, what is it that you really want to do? Because he was sharing, I don't know what I want to do with my life. And I'm like, you know, number one, you're only 17. It's not a life thing. Just think about what it is that you want to be doing next. But he started showing me some of his drawings, and I was like, oh my goodness, these are amazing. Like, what could you do with these? And we sort of started opening this conversation, and he's like, yeah, but my parents told me that I can't do that. I need to choose something that makes me money. And I'm like, all right. I said, I know so many creatives that are making really good money. So you can choose who to listen to, but you need to do something with this. And I think that is time. It really is time to let that narrative go. But to also understand that there's a framework, that you can't just go into doing something that you're passionate about and expect to make money, that there is things that you need to do. And that's what you're going to share today. You're going to share your process for how to do that. So can you take us back to the time where you moved into your design work? Did you have that starving artist moment? Is that something that you had to go in the depths to come out? Or did you just go in and go, no, I know that we can make this work? And using that business more, sort of, I guess, that business background from the advertising.
Yeah. Okay. So I think there are a couple of things here, because I don't think I ever had a starving artist moment. Although I think there are a lot of people who are giving advice to their kids that they can't make money from their art and all of that good stuff. The difference between myself and one of those parents is simply that they haven't been educated on all the ways you can make money.
100%.
Yeah. If they knew what I knew, they would not be telling that kid to not make money with their art. Okay. It's just marketplaces. So, and we can talk a little bit about that. I'm so happy to share like what we talk to our designers about. So I think that a lot of times, and we're going to talk about a framework here in a second, but I think a lot of times we are scared of the unknown, right? And just because we see a lot of artists out there who are starving because they haven't figured out how to sell their art, or it's because they have chosen to sell their art in traditional methods. So what do I mean by that? I just had my good friend David Mickle to my house. We did a bunch of videos and illustrations on and talking about being an artist. He is the one who did the artwork for Wes Anderson's Asteroid City. So he was the main artist in that. He's done all the Utah billboards. He's brilliant. He's an amazing artist and he sells in a lot of galleries. What he does is traditional. It's what most artists think that they're supposed to do. And in every field, there's something like this. If you're an author, you think you have to be with one of the top five publishers, right? If you are, I can't even think of another thing, but you get the idea. Like if you do certain things, you expect that these are the certain methods. Well, in the last 10 years or so, the markets have changed so dramatically. There are all these little tiny niche fields out there that you can sell and make money in as any kind of, you know, an artist, designer, an illustrator, as an author, that most people aren't taking advantage of because they don't know they exist. Let me give you an example. So for this boy, if he was in my classroom or if we had run into each other, because I met another kid just like him, I was a guest lecturer at a university and I had this kid come up to me and say, do you think I can really do this? Because I don't want to work at Walmart the rest of my life. And I was like, this is what they're thinking. They're thinking, if I can't figure this out, this is what I'm going to have to do with my life. I said, yes. Okay. So I said, here's the number one thing. It's medium. So if you take your artwork and you put it in a format that we call usable. So William Morris always said things need to be usable and beautiful. Okay. Most of us artists, we have it down. We can make things beautiful. We don't do the usable very well. Okay. there's only so much wall space to put artwork up on. So we've got to take that artwork and let's go format it in a way that's usable for someone. So what does that look like? Sticker sheets, planners, what we call in the Cricut and Silhouette space, SVG files. So die cutting files. Let's see, what else is there? There's so many emotes. Have you heard of those? They're for Twitch streamers. Like there are all these tiny GoodNotes stickers, which is a digital sticker just used for GoodNotes apps. So there are all these markets. I just named a little bit, like we have a mountain of these, right? The number of designers who have made a lot of money off of teacher paid teachers, right? So building really usable workbooks for teachers to buy that are beautiful, gorgeously laid out and informational, right? The problem almost always for most of us is we're not looking at format. We're not looking at medium. And if we could make that change in our brain, how do I take this art that I'm making and make it usable? That's when everything changes. That's when you can start making money.
I love this so much. Can you share a little bit about your design process model? Because I think that this is where so many people get stuck. And as you're explaining, and if you're listening or watching, I want you to sort of think, and we're going to go into a little bit deeper about how we can even use this model in business itself, even if you're not a designer, or I'm not going to say creative, because I think as coaches and consultants, we are creative. We're all writing all the time. You know, we want our brand to be beautiful, but just take us through the framework and think about all of the different ways that we can implement this.
This is from my book, Design Profit Prosper, and it's a really easy read. But this particular model is the one that honestly made my designers do a little self-check. And so I'm hoping that's what this does for you guys as well. I teach this really often. It can be used a lot of different ways. So if you're a coach or any kind of business, this applies to you. It's the exact same model I use to create my most current business, which is my design program, and the same one I used as a designer, as a practitioner. So, and we kept the words really simple and a little bit more broad so that you can use it in your creative business, whatever it is. So there's four steps in this model. It was too bad. I really wanted it to be only three, but there really is four steps.
As a true creative.
It's just like, it would be easier if it was three, but it's four steps. So the first step is ideation, right? We always get the idea. So however you use that idea, it's just kind of sitting and mulling in your head. Maybe you've journaled it out. Maybe you've used a Trello, you know, or an app to like keep all your good ideas. But first is ideation. The second is implementation. For designers, this is where we're actually doing the design work. For coaches, very often this is where we're making the DIY course or we're building the program or anything like that, right? Implementation is actually the making of the product or the good. Okay. Number three is production. This is the one that my designers hate the most and do the least. Okay. Because they are so excited about being creative. And what I find actually is coaches and business owners have the same problem. Nobody wants to do production because it's the mundane stuff. It's preparing it perfectly for the customer. It's making sure for designers, it's making sure the zip file has everything in it, the terms of use, the actual product, getting it in all the right product formats, right? For coaches, it might be making sure that it's correct on the website, that the offer is connected to it. And so that it actually sits up, it's actually like building all the stuff around it to make sure it works and it's ready to go. It's not fun. It's the uploading everything to Vivo and linking it up. Nobody enjoys this part. Okay. So that's three, production. Number four is sales. And sales shouldn't be as scary as the word itself suggests. In the designer world, sales for a lot of designers feels like, oh, so scary. I've got to sell it for my own website. We teach them otherwise. We use online platforms where we can sell through other platforms. Now, for coaches and authors, a lot of times we do have to have our own platforms for that, right? But there are other ways, like we're doing right now. We're doing a podcast together. We're on YouTube together or whatever. So there are collaborative things that you can do to get visibility out there to help you with sales. But sales can be anything all the way from SEO to actually marketing efforts, all the way to just writing a description, right? So it just really depends on what market you're in.
Now, I don't think that many people have a problem with the ideation process. I think that the world is full of ideas, but I also know it to be true that there are so many ideas that go to the grave and never get touched. What can you specifically talk about in the implementation phase? Because this is, you know, you talked about production tripping people up, but I even see that the trip up right from the beginning of like, I've got this idea, it's going to change the world, I'm going to be a millionaire. That's really great. But how do you see, or how do you work with your clients to help them move into that next phase really well?
Yeah. I mean, it depends on how big the idea is, right? Mm-hmm. So if your idea is tiny, like I think about designers, sorry, those are my examples, but they're having an idea to make a card, right? So that's the idea is to make the card, and then they have to go to implement and actually make the card. That's a little idea. It can be implemented in a couple of hours, right? Now, if you have a big idea, like I want to start a program, you know, I want to start an interior design program, or I want to start a coaching program, right? That's a big idea. So that's a big enough idea that you probably have to spend a little bit time of your implementation time also doing a little bit of research, right? To make sure that you're the right fit for the marketplace, that you're going to be able to do exactly what you want to do, that you have the tech involved, right? And so there's like all these pieces that are like 30 minute, 1 hour little bites that you have to kind of figure out before you can actually even make maybe the thing that you want to make. So implementation ends up being this really big, scary monster that you have to like kind of like dig into. So depending on how big the idea is how big the implementation will have to be. One of the things that we tell people to do that I think works really nice is if you have any kind of project management software, is to create a board called Parked Projects. And what that really does is it allows those ideas to marinate before you implement. That way you're working on the right ideas at the right time. We've had an idea in our company for about 2 years now, and we've been sitting on it, waiting for the right time to implement it. We knew this year was probably the right time, and we can't even talk about it because it's kind of secret. But like, once it gets to a certain point, then we can let everybody know about it and we do the full implementation of it. But we kind of have to spend some time on if something is really big, we got to spend time making sure we have the right implementation to do that thing really big, right?
What I want to talk about is the people that you need to surround yourself to really get this to that implementation phase, because I think that the people around you are really important. Who are the people that, in your opinion, you need to really make sure are in your corner at this phase?
I think we're in an interesting phase where, I hate to say it, but you have to pay to play. And I think that is, I never saw it before this phase, not the way I see it now, but one of the first things I did was join a mastermind. I mean, very first things in order to get to the next level. I joined that mastermind. It was scary. It was more money than I had ever spent in my life. And it was worth every freaking penny. Mm-hmm. And the reason is for the very thing you're talking about is because it put me in community with other women entrepreneurs that I needed help from. And I didn't even know I needed help from them. And what happened is many of them are some of my best friends. I talk to daily now. I go on trips with. And those women inform so many of the decisions I make. You know, it's really nice when Facebook ads are not doing what I want. And I can hear from five other CEOs, hey, Facebook ads is not working for me and me and me and me and me. Suddenly you have a consensus like, oh, it's not my branding right now. There's something going on that I don't really understand, but at least I know it's not just me. And I think that's more important than people realize because it's called, what we call it in our program is the inside scoop. When you have the inside scoop, then you behave differently than people who do not have a network or a community supporting them. And if you're doing everything on your own, then you're guessing. Everything's guessing. You don't know how much money to put into something. You don't know how much time to put into something. You have no idea if this idea is going to work. You're just guessing. it's all a guesswork game. But if you know other people that are similar in your space, and I would say either experts or doing something similar to you, you're going to have a better idea of how to move forward.
Mm.
I think network and community are just about everything at this point in time.
Yeah. I mean, I asked the question because I couldn't agree more. And there's this accountability piece too, where you don't want to, you know, I'll put it in air quotes, fail. I'm not a big believer in failure. It's all learnings. But you don't want to fail in front of your peers. So it's almost this accountability piece like, well, okay, I've got to make it work. Let's, you know, head down. Let's ask the question. You know, you talked about the five people whose Facebook ads aren't working. You know, the story doesn't end there. Then it's like, well, let's put our heads together and figure out what's going on. What is it that we've all missed? What can we change? What can we, you know, iterate? It's about, you know, working together with a group of people that have a similar, you know, they want a similar outcome. They're there because they want to get to the next level.
Yeah. Especially even in the Facebook ad example, usually what happens is you go to the group and you go, this is what's happening to me. And everyone's like, oh, this is happening to me. Who has figured this out? Well, we decided instead of doing Facebook ads, we're going to do speaking gigs, or we're going to go do, it's like you understand what the result is you're all looking for. And suddenly there's all these ideas about how you can get the same result different ways. And some of their ways will not work for you, but some of them might spark something in your head. And that's the creative piece where you spark something and you go, wait, I don't know if that will work for me, but what if we did this?
Mm-hmm. 100%. Let's talk about the production phase. You said this is the piece that most people don't like. This is the way that I'm hearing it. This is the real logical piece. This is where you have to sort of park your creativity. This is why people don't like it. You're swapping into that left side of the brain. What are some ways that you specifically help your creatives to understand the importance of this and to motivate them to actually get it done?
Yeah. So our biggest thing is cycles. So especially for us in the design world, especially because we're doing smaller things than, you know, coaches are doing, like writing a book, right? It's gonna be like, you have the idea, you implement, like it's like a year of writing your book or whatever. So it's like a long process. So for designers, if we know we can run a process through, you know, go through that whole loop in only a matter of hours, then we like to see how fast you can run through that loop. Because if you can go through that loop really quickly, then we know you will be profitable. It's very, very easy to see it. So I don't know that this solution is the same solution you'd have for other things. Definitely not a production solution in owning a program. So I'll say this. But for our designers, we try to figure out ways to make production a game or fun. So if it's a bunch of my like logical, boring, like step-by-step things, like zipping up files, making new files, getting them all prepared, we're always like, you're only allowed, like one of the things I did is my guilty pleasure, like TV show, that's the only time I'm allowed to watch it is during that. So it'll be running in the background and I'm doing these really boring things. But I look forward to production time because that's the only time I can watch that guilty pleasure type show, right? So like you've got to come up with some ways to motivate yourself to get through production. Now, if you're a coach or an author or you're, you know, practitioner, your production time might look like a lot of administrative duties where you have to do things that maybe require your brain. Like you're like, I have to focus. I have to do these things. So instead, give yourself a treat at the beginning and the end. Figure out ways or treats along the way that will motivate you and feel great about it. The other thing is just break it up into, I would say, not even hour segments, but 30-minute segments. Mm-hmm. I find that my brain works the best if I know this is going to take me 30 minutes. I treat it like a really fast deadline, right? Because I'll be like, I only have 30 minutes to get this one little thing done. I'm going to get it done. I'm going to be efficient. And then I'll move on to my next thing. So smaller, more sizable bites of production, and then as many rewards as you can put into that process.
I love that so much. Gamification is something that I personally use for those horrible things too. And it was so funny because I was sitting and, oh, that's the only time that I actually will go and like work on the couch or on the sofa in a really weird, you know I shouldn't be sitting like this. I'm all twisted up, but it feels comfy. And just at this time, I'm going to do this because that's what I need to do. And I was doing something the other day and I was like, oh, I want to go and do such and such. And I went to put my laptop down and get up and I thought, no, just get this one little thing done and then you can have it. So I school myself. I'm like the teacher that's like, no, just get that thing done. Then you can go and do the thing. So it's about really making it manageable in whatever way it is that you want to, you know, be living, be doing. Yeah, I love that so much.
Yeah, I think especially it's not just production, it's sales too. It's like any, maybe implementation for some of you guys, right? If implementation is your difficult thing, whatever you can do to make the process fun. I don't think, the gamification, I don't think people do this enough with themselves. Like, can I just do one more thing? I think if when we treat ourselves like this, like, hey, we can just do one more little thing, it changes everything.
And it's amazing how often you'll set yourself that 30-minute goal and you'll think, oh, I'm so close. Maybe I will just get it done now. It makes it so much more manageable, right?
Yeah, it is funny how many times I'll say, I'm just going to do this one thing and I'm just going to start it and then I'm going to walk away. I'm going to go make dinner. And then I'm sitting there 2 hours later and I've almost finished the entire thing, right? Because half the battle, I think, is it James Clear on Atomic Habits who talks about like half the battle is just getting started. Like most people just don't want to get started. So if you can just get started, then you've already contributed more than you realize.
Totally, totally. Let's talk about sales, because before we started recording, you were talking about all sorts of things here rather than just, you know, people think sales of I've just got to get on the call and make the sale, or I've just got to get someone to click the button and make the sale. But there's so much more to it. Can you talk about all the different things, or well, not all the different things, but some of the different things that people can look at for this area?
Yeah, I think sales is maybe one of the scariest things for creatives. It might be scary to your coaches and practitioners as well, because sales just feels like a yicky word, right? Like it feels like, oh, I don't want to do sales. I think we have to change our mindset around it. And one of the ways that we've done it in our world is we figured out ways to make sales without you actually selling, which sounds a little bit crazy. And one of the ways that we do that is we use other people's platforms. And when I say that, I'm really talking about online design, anywhere you would buy products. Amazon is an online platform. Etsy is an online platform. So like any place where you can sell your design work or your creative work in a very usable format is a great place to sell. And when you start really looking at those platforms, do you feel like the person that you bought whatever the hoodie from on Amazon, did you feel like you were being sold to? No, you're probably going to Amazon anyway and just looking for a hoodie and you found the one that was purple that you needed and you just pulled it off, right? It can be that simple. And I think people are scared. And I think also what we're seeing out there is everyone sees people who make big audiences. So they build these huge audiences and then they sell. And that feels really scary because it's hard to, first of all, build a really big audience. Second of all, it means you have to be vulnerable and put yourself out there. And that also feels very scary. And my words to people who are scared of sales is to actually start working with platforms that will already sell for you, like the Amazons and the Etsys and any number, Target even. I mean, like, it's like crazy. Like online, they accept people, Walmart, Amazon, they accept sales from people, products from people that they don't in their stores. And so online is such an interesting place because things are sold and the mindset is a little bit different. So you don't have to have a monstrous following. You don't have to have a big audience. I do think at some point in your career, you do need to start growing it. But usually at the beginning, we just got to get really good at the thing that we're supposed to be really good at, that we're the expert at. And if we can get really good at that, then you can start working on the audience. But at the beginning, try to find ways to sell that don't feel very scary.
Love it so much. How did you make the transition from doing your creative pursuits and your design work to working with designers, helping them to make money? What was that transition like? And what was the catalyst for that?
So the catalyst for it was I was actually getting a little bit bombarded by people asking how I was making so much money. So that was kind of how it all started. I had this very little following on Instagram. I didn't have a big following. I had hardly a following on YouTube, but I was just putting out content. And it wasn't because I was a content creator. I was putting out content that supported my design work. So it was the opposite of influencers. In fact, I still am the opposite of influencers. We produce stuff and then we showcase it on any social media platform that we're doing. So the average income for a designer is about $50,000 when you come out of graphic design school in the United States. And I was doing about five times that much. And people were like, what the heck? Like, what is happening here? And what I realized is that people were so busy thinking and having great ideas, but not actually creating. So that was the first part, like not doing that implementation piece. And then second to that, most of them got stuck at production because they didn't want to do it. They didn't put time on their calendars for it. And then finally, they just didn't know where to sell it and what to do with it, which is kind of how this design process model came about. Cause it was like all the stuff I was doing on a daily basis. And I was like, you know what? I started a design program just to teach people design and, you know, how to run their businesses. And it just very quickly morphed into this monstrous program. It was no intention of my mind to do this. I just thought, you know, I'll just help the people who've been begging me to do this, right? I was like, I'll just help the people who are wanting to know how to do this. I'll just put a price on it. I'll show up for meetings and I'll just teach them. And just turned into something totally different. They all started asking me the community piece, right? They said, hey, Karina, we see everybody's like design work in our meetings. We're wondering if we can talk to each other. And I'm like, what? And they're like, yeah, can we talk to each other? And I was just like, sure. And so I built them a community. They all like started chatting with each other. They love talking to each other. And then about 3 or 4 months later, they were like, hey, Karina, we would like to see each other's faces. And I was just like, what do you mean? They were like, well, we would like to like see each other and talk to each other. And I was just like, what? And so then we started having, I actually brought my entire program, everyone to that point. I put them in a big meeting together. And I said, this is what I'm hearing. What do you guys want? And so then they all started telling me like, we would like to have meetings together. We'd like to talk to each other. We want to, and I was just like, okay, fine. And so then we started putting them in small groups and they had their own meetings so they could talk about their wins, their loses, things they're running into, problems they were having. And they named them. I was like, you must name it. And they named it squads. So we have a squad meeting every single month now. And then a year after that, the program's only not even hit 3 years old at this time, which is so crazy at the time of recording this. But a year after that, we took a group of them. We said, who wants to, you know, go on a trip together? And everyone's like, oh, we all want to go on a trip together. So I took them to Hamilton, Missouri, which is the Quilt Town USA, because Jenny Doan said, Karina, you should bring them all here. It'd be really fun. They could see all these designs and fabric designs. It'd be fun. I said, okay, sure. Well, let's do it. And we put them on an app called Marco Polo so that they could all talk to each other while we were on this trip together. And they were like, oh, Karina, we love this. We would like this in the regular program. So like everybody can talk to each other. And I was like, seriously, like, why do you keep asking me for this stuff? And I was just like, fine, we'll do it. Cause it's so much management, right? Cause now we're managing a written community and we're managing and moderating their squad meetings. And now we're managing an app. But I will tell you, you build the best community ever when you do what your community asks you to do.
Yes.
And that's what we did. And so our community, some of them, we can't get them to leave. They all just want to still hang out and be with each other. And I just think the best thing you can do is do what your members ask you to do.
100%. Listen to the whispers. Listen to what people tell you. And community is the stickiness that, you know, people will stay in your programs because of the community. You know, they'll come because of the content, what they want to learn. They will make transformation through what you teach them, through the coaching, but they will stay for the community. And I think that when you build something like that, that will be the most successful part of your program. Because people are craving connection and they want to be connected with people that are on a similar journey to them, someone that understands the challenges, the losses, you know, that want to be inspired and motivated by other people that are doing what they want to be doing. And, you know, also family and friends don't understand the roller coaster. So having those people that go, oh my God, we get it. We know what that's like. You know, even going back to your little Facebook example, when you're in the silo of your business and thinking, what am I doing wrong? You know, just having other people that you can talk to about that and then having a laugh about that instead of going into the depths of despair, it makes such a difference.
Yeah, I do think there's a lot of mental things that go on when you're a business owner, right? You start to doubt yourself. People have imposter syndrome. There are things that feel really difficult and unmanageable. And by having other people on that road with you, it makes a huge difference. And I should have predicted that my community was going to want that, you know, in my design. I should have known because that was the stuff I was looking for. That's why I joined a
Yes.
mastermind, right? Yeah.
Yeah, love that. Now you've just released a new book. So you talked before about your book, Design Profit Prosper, but you've just released a new book, Make Art That Sells. I love your cover. It's so beautiful. Tell us a little bit about that book.
Okay, so this book is so fun, and we have something fun for you guys that are listening that doesn't matter where you're at, I think will help you. There's actually another formula in this book. I had a professor ask me, hey, Karina, could you write a book about, because they use the other book at their college. They said, Karina, is there any way you would write a book about customer acquisition? Basically, like, how do you make stuff for customers? And I was like, so how to make art that sells. And that's how the name of the book came out. So how to make art that sells. And so I wrote this book and I was like, this is gonna be really different than my first book. My first book is kind of like my overall ideology of like little processes and how to get to where you need to go and how to design. This book is for basically any creative because you can just insert the word art to whatever, make books that sell, make, you know, whatever it is, coaching that sells. Okay. And you can use the formula. So every chapter unleashes one little piece of the formula for you and is, I tried to make it really fun and we made it an art history book. So basically every chapter also features some kind of artist in history. So Vincent van Gogh, Monet, Picasso, Norman Rockwell. And so every chapter kind of features an artist and we kind of start with their story and then we introduce a piece of the formula. And by the end, you have the full formula. And what we have is we have a masterclass for this that is we're going to give to you guys for free. So don't pay for it. But if you go to makeartbook.com, makeartbook.com, I had to make sure I said that right.
Yeah.
There's a link there for the book, which you can get. But if you don't want the book or you just want the masterclass, there is a link there for the masterclass. Click on that. I want you to put in the code make art, and that will get you the masterclass for free. It's very fun. It is like six lessons. I show artwork and we talk about the formula. I show you how we plug and play it. It's incredibly fun. All my books are on Amazon if you're looking for my books. And this masterclass was really meant for all creatives.
Love it. So, of course, we'll put all of those links wherever you're listening. It'll be just down below so that you click and grab that. I think that as, like, I want to loop back to what I said right at the very beginning, as coaches, consultants, experts, it's really important to bring that creative aspect out in what we're doing because that is what people are going to be attracted to us for. It's our point of difference, it's our secret sauce. So, highly recommend. You know, really cultivating that creative side. And I think that this is a great resource to be able to do that. Karina, you shared lots of gold today. For the people that are listening, what is one thing you want to leave them with that just will help them to walk away from this inspired, motivated to do, you know, whatever it is that they love?
Whatever you're doing right now is probably already super creative, right? All creativity is what I always call like being an ingenious. Not all of us are geniuses. I'm definitely not a genius, but I'm definitely ingenious. And I suspect you are too. Someone who's ingenious takes all the pieces of the world around them and they put them together in an interesting way. That's all being creative is. That's all it is, right? As a designer, our goal is visual solutions. That is literally just taking all the different elements out there, bringing them together into a page or a layout so that it makes sense to someone who watches it or looks at it, right? And that's what you're doing as an expert, as a coach, as a consultant, as a practitioner, as a designer. Like all of those things, really, at the end of the day, being creative is just taking all the things around you and putting it together in an interesting way. That's what true creativity is. It's not coming out with stuff that's never been done before. It's your secret sauce, like that mix of what you bring to the table. I suspect you already have it. You probably just have not leaned into it. This is what I see a lot. People who are already doing amazing, cool things, and they already have the great ideas for it, but you just haven't leaned all the way into it to make it go, to make it actually work. And I would say the best thing you can do is take that magic, whatever it is for you, and really lean into it in whatever way that you need to make your business go.
Love that so much. Karina, thank you so much for coming and sharing today. It's been an absolute pleasure having this chat with you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining me for this episode of the Influence by Design podcast. If you want more, head over to influencebydesignpodcast.com for the show notes and links to today's gifts and sponsors. And if you're looking to connect with other experts who are growing and scaling their business too, join us in the Coaches, Thought Leaders and Changemakers community on Facebook. The links are waiting for you over at influencebydesignpodcast.com.